A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Welcome to A Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host as we explore the changes at work in the performing arts. Each week, I'll bring you some of the latest news and also take time to examine many of the issues that are challenging arts organizations. Today, as we prepare to mark Martin Luther King Jr. Day, we'll hear about a symphony orchestra that has been developing strong ties to the African American community in its own city for a quarter of a century. The St. Louis Symphony Orchestra's In Unison program is just one of many community engagement projects, and I'll speak with its artist-in-residence, Brian Owens, and the orchestra's Director of Diversity and Community Affairs, Maureen Byrne. As part of A Tempo, we're pleased to bring you some of the news from around the world of the performing arts. Charles Dutoit is officially out at the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra, where he served as artistic director and principal conductor, as new and more detailed allegations emerged regarding his alleged sexual abuse of women musicians and singers. The Philharmonic said in a statement that Dutoit's resignation was immediate and followed an emergency board meeting in the wake of a new report by the Associated Press. In the report, an additional six women have said to have come forward with allegations, including one woman who said she was raped. According to the Associated Press, Dutoit denied the allegations and said he was appalled and sickened to have been accused of rape. Since the allegations emerged last month, Dutoit has been dropped from his various posts at other orchestras, including the Philadelphia Orchestra, where he had been serving as conductor laureate. If you have a favorite New Jersey arts organization, you have just over 1 month to vote in this year's Discover Jersey Arts People's Choice Awards. Among the nominees include MacArthur Theater, NJPAC, and State Theater New Jersey in the Large Performing Arts Center category, New Jersey Symphony Orchestra, Princeton Symphony Orchestra, or Bay Atlantic Symphony in the Orchestral category, and the Newark Boys Chorus, Princeton Pro Musica, and Westminster Choir for choral ensembles. Other categories include ballet companies, art museums, and music festivals. A full list and the online ballot can be found at jerseyarts.com/peopleschoice. Voting continues through February 20th. Those are just some of the headlines this week from around the arts world. In recent years, orchestras across the U.S. have been bolstering their efforts to foster closer ties with their communities, particularly African Americans and Latinos, in an effort to be more inclusive and ensure better access to concerts, music education, and the overall human experience that classical music has to offer. This has in part reflected calls for more national discussions of social justice, brought to the forefront amid police shootings and community responses in cities including Baltimore and Ferguson, Missouri. Several months after the shooting death of Michael Brown in Ferguson, protesters interrupted a performance of the Brahms Requiem by the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra, an incident that prompted many to ask, what exactly is a symphony orchestra's role in this discussion? In fact, the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra has been part of this conversation for about a quarter of a century. In 1992, it launched a program called In Unison, through which it developed relationships with African American churches to hold free concerts by symphony musicians at their houses of worship. 2 years later, it created the In Unison Chorus, which performs with the symphony several times throughout the season. In Unison now also includes scholarships, fellowships, and mentoring for local students, and a range of other engaging programs. This past Friday, In Unison presented its latest program called Keep Pushing, The Music of Curtis Mayfield, bringing together a variety of In Unison participants and guest performers. As we mark Martin Luther King Jr. Day, it seemed appropriate to reach out to the orchestra to find out more about how In Unison and several other community engagement programs that bring the orchestra into schools, healthcare facilities, and even correctional facilities have been bringing it closer to the community. Brian Owens is the In Unison Artist in Residence, and Maureen Byrne is Director of Diversity and Community Affairs. I spoke with them earlier this week, before the concert, about these programs and the most recent In Unison performance.
We did the concert about 2 years ago, and it was received extremely well. I think we broke records for our onstage concert attendance. And the music of Curtis Mayfield, which anybody who knows Curtis Mayfield knows that throughout the 60s, even much of the 70s, he was a quintessential voice for civil rights. And one of the things that I loved about the music of Curtis Mayfield is, number one, the amount of traditional orchestral instrumentation that he used in his music, and the fact that one of his main producers was a gentleman by the name of Donny Hathaway, who is also from St. Louis. So there are a couple ties for me to Curtis Mayfield and his music. I grew up listening to it. But I think, especially in the times we live in now, the music that was written back then is so well suited to speak to, address issues, bring hope, all of those kinds of things that I think we need right now.
Everybody who's going to be on stage on Friday evening represent a number of different constituents of the St. Louis Symphony. So we'll have, of course, St. Louis Symphony musicians on the stage, but we'll also have a number of In Unison program scholars, fellows. These are college students who are studying some facet of music. We help them out a little bit with their college tuition. Brian mentors them very, very closely so that they're gaining things beyond the college curriculum, but they'll be performing as part of this concert. And also some students from our peer-to-peer mentoring music initiative. These are young students who play in their school orchestra, their string students, but they don't have the means to have a private teacher. So they are part of an initiative which pairs them with a mentor from the youth orchestra. And those duos of musicians part of this concert as well. So it's just a beautiful, not only is the music so powerful, but it's a beautiful, diverse, wonderful musical palette on the stage on Friday evening.
And if I may add, our special guest that evening, in addition to members of the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra, will be Joey Kibble of Take Six. So I'm really excited about that because that's a bucket list item for me.
And members of the Ferguson Middle School Choir that you've been working with, right, Brian?
Yeah. And just wait, this morning, we started a new fellowship specifically to work with one of our graduate fellows who wants to be a conductor. So TJ Abernathy will be conducting two pieces, and the rest of the concert will be conducted by Kevin Macbeth, who is the music director and conductor for the In Unison Chorus. So it's like a family affair. It's like everybody's going to be involved.
Well, now this is part of the In Unison program, and that's been around, I understand, about 25 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Maureen, if you can give us a little bit of an idea of the evolution, how it started and where it's come in that time, and how and the role it's played in the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra's working within the community.
Well, how it started, and you're right, it started 1994 was the first year. And by the way, a huge shout out to the Monsanto Fund. They have been a huge financial supporter of the In Unison program and its evolution through the years. It was just announced a couple of weeks ago that they their grant for this year is $160,000. And that goes a long way to funding the 120-member In Unison chorus. It's an all-volunteer chorus, however. Having rehearsals and concerts at Powell Hall costs money, and the Monsanto grant helps with that. But really what the In Unison Chorus even grew out of was the In Unison Church Program, which Brian currently leads. And this church program started as a way to just create familiarity and openness between predominantly African-American churches and musicians of the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra. It started with five churches. We now have 40 churches in the program, and in fact, we're completely over capacity at this point. And what we do with the churches is not only do we provide discount tickets to the members, but that's where we tend to recruit members for the In Unison Chorus. We have musicians from the symphony who are part of Sunday morning worship services once a year for each church. And we bring the church congregations to the big In Unison Chorus concerts that are performed here at Powell Hall, which sell out. The Gospel Christmas typically sells out, as does our February Lift Every Voice concert. So over the past 20-plus years, it's just been a remarkable mainstay for this organization, having this incredible chorus and these incredible relationships with these 40 churches.
And Brian, you're artist in residence. First of all, how long have you had that role, and what have you brought to the program as artist in residence?
I and my wife were both In Unison Scholars. We were in college.
In the early 2000s.
So that's kind of where my relationship started, was as a scholar. And then in 2008, I was a community programs coordinator. And then in 2010, I took over the In Unison church program. And then I think around 2012,
we started mentoring the music.
And then 13, 14 is when I became artist in residence. And really, you know, they've given me a lot of leverage and freedom to kind of develop programming around the very things that made me an individual that they would want to hire and work with. Mentoring is a huge part of what we do. And when I say mentoring, it is very specific from, you know, we have a lot of food time together with our students. Now I do a meeting every other week with my students, talk about how they're doing in school, developing different pathways for them, helping them figure out what direction they want to go in, and then providing opportunities and experiences that will help put them in a position to do that. And I'm one of the things I'm most proud of being a part of is the fact that since, I would say, 2013, when we started mentoring the music of our maybe 8 students that have graduated from college, 4 of them are still in the city. Well, 4 of them are actively working in the arts, still in partnership with us. One of them is in Washington State and works for a nonprofit that we're partnering with. So, I mean, it's great to see how the program has evolved and is now working in developing leaders for now, because they're all in leadership positions where they are, and it's just really, really fun to watch.
And concerts like the one that's coming up on Friday night are kind of a training ground for these In Unison Scholars and Fellows, and not just a training ground for some of the skills that Brian has been imparting on them, but also a performance opportunity for many of them. But some of those success stories that Brian was mentioning, for example, there's a teacher in Normandy School Collaborative who is the director of elementary orchestras. Her name is Regine Washington. She came out of our In Unison Scholar and Fellow program and is now in a position herself to affect hundreds, if not thousands, of student lives in her position. And I think Brian deserves a lot of credit in you know, helping stories like that to become realities.
Yeah, and many of our stories, the cool thing, too, is that many of our stories, they're young African-American females.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you have Regine, you have Octavia Sidnor, who just graduated about a year ago and who is working with the symphony and developing as someone who can potentially one day lead programming. She coordinates the peer-to-peer strings program. And then you have Maria Ellis, who, you know, was a fellow and she graduated, and now she's
community outreach
for the St. Louis Children's Choir, which is awesome. Just to see them not only doing well, but being able to take on positions of leadership where they can actually have impact right now. And I think that's what we try to instill and help them with while they were students, is that you can have impact right now. You don't have to wait till you graduate. You don't have to wait till you finish your degree. You can have impact right now. And that's what we try to instill in all of our students.
Well, now, Brian, you're a native of Ferguson. And a few years ago, Ferguson and the St. Louis region in general really were cast under a very negative spotlight in terms of the national, you know, bringing so many issues to the national scene. Looking at a program like this, what do you see as some of the positive things that have been happening in the community, and what are some ways that you think they could be broadened and kind of taken further?
I am actually a native of Illinois. So I'm from Illinois, right across the river. I live in Ferguson now. I've lived there for, you know, about 10 years. So Ferguson is where I live and where I'm going to be from, but it's not like I've lived in Illinois. So what it does, though, too, is it gives me a broader perspective of the region, right? So one of the things I can say is that Ferguson is not the only Ferguson. So we're just the ones who got cast into the spotlight because of the tragic situation on all sides for all people. It was a tragic situation. I am very proud of the way my city is trying to handle it. It's not perfect, but, you know, I think time will tell. You know, with programming like this, I think one of the things that it shows is that change is not something that we always, I think, have to wait for. And I feel like so many times we feel like we're waiting for change and we're waiting on other people to bring change. And really, I think what we try to instill in our students is that you can live change right now. Like, when we get on a stage and we perform in front of people music that brings hope, that's change in the moment. Right after Mike Brown was killed in September of 2014, you know, we had a concert on the parking lot of my church in Ferguson, and the symphony was right there involved, like showing that, you know, change is something that we participate in every day and not necessarily something that we have to wait for. So that's one of, I think for me in this region right now, I'm excited about partnering with people and organizations who understand that, you know, we can have impact. Like I said, our students, all of us, we can have impact every day with the choices we make. And that in and of itself, in aggregate over time, becomes this larger expression of change. But on a smaller level, we're taking part in change every single day. That's why I love what I do, because every day I wake up, I thank God that I'm being a part of change. And it's not the stuff that's going to be on the news. It's not the stuff that CNN or Fox is going to talk about right now. But hopefully in 10 years, when we look back on our city and we look at where our city is, we can say that we are in a better place than we were.
Well, stepping back just for a minute, you know, In Unison is one of many programs that the symphony has in terms of diversity. You have a whole range of in the community programs, colleges, houses of worship, healthcare facilities. Is there any place that the symphony is not at this point as far as bringing outreach to other people?
You know, there really isn't. There was just a month ago yesterday, Brian and a quartet of musicians had a holiday concert on a Friday evening in the gym of the Family Court of St. Louis County Detention Center. So honestly, we will bring our, if we think we can impact people where they are, it doesn't matter how many, it doesn't matter how few, it doesn't matter their circumstance, we're going to try and do that. So no, I think we've played in many, many, many different places for many, many, many different audiences.
What has helped make that such a priority for the orchestra?
I've tried to answer this question because I remember being with some colleagues from around the country who do what we do at other orchestras, and I kind of figured every single orchestra in the United States did this kind of work and possibly even on the level that we do it. And I was kind of surprised to find out that we're not completely unique, but we are fairly muscular in this arena. I credit the musicians of this orchestra for their willingness to really go along with us in this kind of work. But, you know, the musicians, they live here too. They've made St. Louis their home. We only have 6 musicians in the orchestra who are originally from the St. Louis region. So that's a lot of people from not just other states in the country, but around the world. And for some reason, St. Louis just seems, or the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra just seems to have this culture of, okay, we live here, we're going to use what we do best to not just hold what we can do for people who can purchase a concert ticket to come and hear the orchestra play on stage at Powell. So it's really a culture that allows us to do this. And, you know, of course, it all costs money. So we're very fortunate to have, you know, the people who support the orchestra who also believe that it is really important to be a, actually live and be a part of our community. And we're delighted that they allow us to do that.
And I think part of it, too, is just like St. Louis is a unique city. I don't know that the things that we participate in, specifically how we participate in them, would necessarily be available in any other city.
That's true.
You know, even just with proximity, with the history of racial tensions and issues specific to Missouri, you know, even going back to the Dred Scott time, and going back to slavery time when, you know, Missouri was in some parts free and some parts slave. I mean, you had this, and I think those tensions still exist and make it possible for this work to be necessary. And I think that's why maybe, you know, St. Louis. The other thing, too, is that St. Louis also has just a rich, rich history of the intermingling of things. You know, whether it's Miles Davis or it's Scott Joplin or it's Michael McDonald, we have a rich history here. And I think all of that comes together to make a space that's possible for this kind of work to exist, to be productive, and to be necessary. And even, like, you know, Marine champions the musicians, and I champion, like, the coordinators of the Unison program, who are absolutely amazing and dedicated to making sure that people of our community are exposed to things that they wouldn't normally be exposed to, whomever they may be. Mm-hmm. And I think those kind of things existing together is what makes it work.
And are there things that you, and directions that you'd like to take it in the future?
Boy, I think we're able to affect a lot of people. I think we wish we could affect every single person. That's kind of a pipe dream. I mean, we are somewhat limited by just, you know, the number of people we have. But, you know, we were just finishing a meeting about how do we reach 100,000 children in St. Louis with a very particular message. And maybe that's not a pipe dream. We're trying to figure out a way for it not to be a pipe dream.
And Maureen, there are at least two other concerts coming up in the season that speak to these efforts of diversity, inclusion, and access to this music. The first one is the extra credit specifically for music educators, and also the Equal Play Celebrating Women Composers. Thought I'd give you just a minute or so to talk about those two and how they fit into this same initiative and this same mission.
Extra credit on stage at Powell is, it's the first time we're ever doing something like this. We have invited music educators, teachers who teach music in our schools, to apply to be part of this side-by-side rehearsal and concert experience with musicians of the St. Louis Symphony. And, you know, here in certainly the greater St. Louis region and in the state of Missouri, we have, it's extraordinary the amount of music that we do have in our schools. It's not like this in all states, but for most schools, public schools in particular, there are opportunities for students to learn to play an instrument, sing, and a lot of this even happens on the elementary level and then certainly on the middle and high school level. So the teachers who teach these students are really, you know, we want to make sure that we are advocating for them, we are supporting them, they realize that the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra is a resource for them. So in inviting them to be part of this extra credit experience, it gives them an opportunity to display their own musical chops, so to speak, on the Powell Hall stage, sitting right next to a member of the orchestra. And it's our way of celebrating what they do for our students in the region and in the state. We have educators coming from as far away as Columbia and Jefferson City and St. Genevieve. I mean, it's extraordinary how many music educators are going to be part of this experience. And then, of course, in March, the Equal Play concert This is actually our second performance of, second production of this particular concert. We started it, it was the idea of one of our cellists, Ann Fagerberg, and she said, you know, we really should play an all-female program, and I thought that was a great idea. You know, 50%, more than 50% of the musicians in the orchestra are women, and they are very interested in elevating and performing the work of women composers. So last year we performed the Equal Play Concert at Washington University. The living composer featured was Joan Tower. She's awesome. She was here for the concert and actually did some lecture classes with the students in the music program at LSU. And this year, because of how popular that concert was at WashU last year, we thought, wow, we should really bring this to our own stage. And so we are. And the composer who we're featuring this year, well, we'll play some works by Fanny Mendelssohn. But the living composer is a woman by the name of Kristen Kuster. She teaches at University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. And she'll be out here for the performance on March 23rd. And her music is extraordinary. The women in the orchestra who are performing her music and other pieces are just so joyful to be putting this music out there. So we'd love to see many mothers and daughters and grandmothers and Girl Scouts and anybody else who would love to come and support women's compositions and women musicians come and hear this concert.
And then for those of us in New Jersey, they will certainly recognize the resident conductor, Gemma New, because we knew her from the NJSO, and she'll be doing the music educator concert. So it's always nice to see conductors like her moving up.
We have a really special program coming up on January the 28th with students from an organization called Life Arts that's out of Ferguson, Missouri, that have been working with an ensemble that is comprised of two individuals from the symphony orchestra. The group is called the 442s, and it's a family concert called Wrapped and Remixed. And the portion that we're specifically doing with the students is they're taking Prokofiev's Romeo and Juliet, and Adam Manis, who's a wonderful friend of the orchestra and an amazing composer and writer, has constructed what we call some hooks. And they're going to, in hip-hop and soul form, tell the story of Romeo and Juliet as part of the show. So we're really excited about that.
That was my conversation with Brian Owens, artist in residence of the In Unison program of the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra, and Maureen Byrne, the symphony's director of diversity and community affairs. More information on In Unison and the Symphony's other programs can be found at slso.org. I hope you enjoy these conversations that I bring you each week on A Tempo. But remember that programs like this are made possible only through your support of this station. To become a member of the Classical Network, go to wwfm.org and click on Donate. Thank you for being a member of the global listening community that is the Classical Network. Thank you for listening to A Tempo. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. Join me again next week as we explore more issues and trends in the world of the performing arts. A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you.